Welcome to the Mid-Penn Bank Podcast, hosted by President and CEO, Rory Retrievi. In this episode, Rory is joined by Joel Frank, Chairman and Managing Partner of Lamb McErlane PC. Here's the conversation.
So, are you a music guy?
Not so much, really. Yeah. Not.
So, what do you, are you, do you know enough about music to evaluate? What do you think of the music?
This music? Yeah. Oh, very pleasant. Very calming, soothing.
Yeah, a little jam.
A little upbeat. Yeah, absolutely. Upbeat. Yeah. Get the juices flowing a little bit.
That's what we were looking for.
Good.
All right. But you didn't, you never, hey, cut it. all right. Scott's, you know, he's fresh off vacation. He's still, still in vacation mode. So when you're younger, your parents didn't make you take like a musical instrument?
Well, no, I did. Like trombone, trumpet, that kind of stuff. I didn't stick with it too long.
My parents never did. And I went to parochial school, so we didn't, like, it wasn't like part of the curriculum,
right,
know, where it is I think in a lot of schools. But so you did trombone and what else?
A trumpet. Yeah,
the brass didn't hold.
I can't read music if my life depended on it.
So if you pick up a trombone or a trumpet today,
nothing. Got nothing for you.
Well, you know, fortunately you didn't go the route of music because you went the route of law, and you know, the real reason I wanted to have you in here, in addition to being a great board member of Mid-Penn Bancorp, Inc. and Mid-Penn Bank, you were recently recognized in the... Now, the super lawyers, is that across the country or is that like a regional?
It's through the state itself. Yeah. 5% of Pennsylvania lawyers get that designation.
Right.
And if you're 5%. Voted upon...
Yeah, 5%. So it's always 5%.
Correct.
Okay.
Voted upon by, like, your peers and judges, etc.
Right.
There's no, like, you know...
So does every lawyer in Pennsylvania get to vote?
I don't know.
So you said it's, you're voted on by the lawyers and judges.
Yep. There's an evaluation panel, yeah. I guess, that go that, you know, I never really looked into it. I mean, fortunate enough, it's, I think it's been 20 years in a row, quite honestly, that I got that designation. Wow. Ever since Super Lawyers started.
Right.
I've been fortunate enough in the area of general litigation to get ahead and be recognized.
Now, do people still, look, when you hear super lawyers, I wish they had a super bankers, you know, I'd hope to be on the list, but.
No doubt.
Do lawyers, like, value that designation, that recognition?
They do. And yeah. You get, you know, I don't really put it on my signature line, my signature block, you know, with my emails or anything like that, but there's some that do.
Right.
So I just have that in my list of accomplishments, if you will, on my CV, et cetera.
Right.
But I don't do it any more than that.
And do they come to you, or do you have to submit your name, or does someone nominate you, or is it just a...
It's like an ongoing process, you know. Yeah. They check in different things. I don't know exactly what criteria they go ahead and use, but it's like different cases that, you know, you've been on, et cetera. You know, your role within a firm, et cetera, mm-hmm. in light of my roles, of different, you know, variables that they take into account. And then, but you don't get it automatically every year. They evaluate every single year.
Right. You just happen to be 20 years in a row.
Correct.
You're a stud. All right. So the magazine, is it, do they put it out once a year?
Correct.
All right. So the reason you got a little bit more notoriety this year than usual is because they did an article on you.
They did. Yeah.
Yeah. Not a front, not, you know, front, now I would have put you on the front cover.
But, yeah, no, what the hell?
But they did. They had a different, you know, I'm sure that person was very deserving of having a front cover. But the article on you was because you have committed yourself to a life of discipline and martial arts and things of that nature, right?
Yeah, correct. What it is, they reach out to various firms to see if they want to feature, you know, somebody for consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a part-time, you know, marketing director within the firm. So she responded on my behalf, thinking that, you know, again, my role in the state athletic commissioner, mm-hmm. as a commissioner on the state athletic commission and the 30 plus years, you know, practicing martial arts, she thought that would maybe be a topic that they were interested in.
Right.
So.
Well, I think it should be a topic that they're interested in. And I mean, you know, that's a unique path.
It's atypical. I'm not sure. Right. You know, I'm not the only one. But, you know, as far as, you know, martial arts background, mm-hmm. commissioners, things, a different story. But yeah, they bought into it, and then there was like probably about a 2-hour interview
mm-hmm.
that I went through, you know, remotely with the author of the article, and ultimately, like, I didn't have a chance to get ahead and like review it or anything like that. But, you know, she put the article together. It was one of, I think, maybe 4 or 5 lawyers specifically that were featured in this year's Super Lawyer magazine.
And the were you comfortable with the headline and the, generally the way the article was written?
Yeah, I was very happy with it. I thought they did a nice job based upon the content of the interview.
Yeah, because yes. Sometimes they can go, those things can go different ways. I was interviewed for, I think it's Harrisburg Magazine, years ago. And I hopefully the person that wrote the article is retired now in case she's listening. I generally think she did a good job, but she, in the very beginning, when we, like, I thought we were just like trying to get to know each other. I told her a story about my oldest daughter, Juliana.
Sure.
You know.
That I do.
And the story was when Juliana was like, I think three or maybe four. I think three, though, because I don't think that her sister had come along yet. And it was summertime, and Jody went away for the weekend. And I think Jody might have been pregnant at the time. So this is probably like 1999 or 2000, probably 2000. And so Jody said, hey, take her over to swim lessons Saturday morning. Okay, great. So we belong to a country club on the other side of the river. So I get her in her swimsuit, and I, you know, put her cover up on and get her into the car, and she's excited, and we drive the, you know, 20 or so minutes to get over to the country club. And as soon as I get out of the car and go over and open up her door, she goes, where are we? I said, we're at swim lessons. She goes, I don't want to go to swim lessons. I'm like, well, I just drove the whole way over. No, I don't want to go to swim. So I'm like now grabbing her out of the car, and she's kicking and screaming, and, you know, she does not want to. And it's a kind of a long walk up to the pool area. So I'm like literally, you know, dragging her along.
Always a good look.
Always a good look. So I get into the pool area, and I'm taking like her shoes off, and I'm taking her cover up off, and she's just screaming and yelling and doing everything she can not to take swim lessons. So I got her close to the pool, and I just picked her up and threw her in.
Uh-huh.
And she swam over to the other side and got out and sat there and took her swim lesson. So
I see where this is going.
5 minutes pass.
All right.
And Jody calls me. And she's like, what did you do to my daughter? And I'm like, I'm looking around like, all right, who dined me out?
Yeah, right.
One of the other moms that were there called Jody and was like, your husband just threw your daughter into the pool, when she was screaming and yelling. So I tell this woman the story. And I'm not even sure why I told her the story.
Right.
But again, it was during the, we're trying to get to know each other. So the article,
so you thought.
Yeah, right. So the article is about Harrisburg at the time. You probably remember this. This is after Steve Reed.
Uh-huh.
And it was right around the time that Linda Thompson became the mayor. And the city was in kind of, you know, financial straits because of the incinerator and everything.
Yep.
And she was asking me what my advice would be. And I was giving that advice. And so she wrote the whole article and basically says, Retrievey tells Harrisburg to sink or swim.
Yeah, I knew exactly where that was going to go.
And she starts it by telling that story. So I've the story blown up.
That's pretty good. Frame. That's funny.
Juliana
That's funny.
Loves it now. Because she doesn't remember the day, but, you know, 27 years later, whatever.
More importantly, we okay with Jody. With Jody all
Yeah. She was fine. Yeah, she was fine. As soon as she found out that I didn't actually drown her, she was good. So you were comfortable with the headline. You were comfortable with the article.
I think maybe 98% of it. There are a couple things there that I tweaked a little bit. But, yeah, I'm absolutely very happy with the article overall.
So you guys, you know, put that out on social media, which is a good idea. Because, like, how would that otherwise help you? Like, I think only lawyers read that Super Lawyers magazine, right?
It's kind of like understanding. Yeah. Yes.
So it's a smart thing for you to put it out on social media. Did you get any good feedback from that?
Yeah, we really did. I mean, people that I haven't heard from in a while, people actually from high school, you know, I've lost touch with, et cetera, you know, got in touch with me and, you know, gives them accolades, et cetera. So it was pretty, it was well received.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So 20 years of doing this, 20 years of being on that list.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's helped you in your career?
I assume as much, Rory. Again, you know, you never know what goes into a potential client's mind, like how much due diligence they do to figure out if you're the right fit or not for them or a given case. So it can't hurt. Let's put it that way. Either it does make a difference or it helps, but mm-hmm. it's certainly not going to hurt. Again, with that, you have 5% designation.
So, Scott, you may or may not know, Joel is the managing partner.
Chairman and managing partner
of Land Macro Lane, which is down in Westchester.
Yeah, headquartered in Westchester, 5-6 offices across the southeast.
Westchester because close to the courthouse?
County seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, Westchester County, correct.
So most of the cases that you get involved in, like what's the general nature of the cases? So are they...
It's so across the board. I mean, the firm now itself. I mean, me personally, the firm overall.
Let's start with you, okay. You personally, and then kind of with all the firm.
It's everywhere and anywhere. Mm-hmm. As far as topics, which is kind of why I like it so much. So I've been practicing. It's 38 years. Wow. Practicing right now, and I still like. I think I told you the competitive nature of it first and foremost in the litigation format.
And you would be considered a litigator,
correct?
Like that's your thing,
correct? Yeah. Listen, with my administrative responsibilities now, I'm not in court as much as I used to be, and the type of matters I handle now are usually more oral argument related or maybe a day or two hearing, but I can't afford, quite honestly, anymore to be like out of the office for like 7 right. or 10 days on a trial and everything that's meant it leads up to that as far as preparation, etc. So a little bit less out front, but still a lot of arguing.
So are some of these, are they like business type cases or are they personal,
It's either between businesses, businesses themselves or between an individual and a business or between individuals. But
and who do you tend to represent? Do you go
either or? I think it's important too because it's not just plaintiff's work or just defense work because mm-hmm. I think that's one of the benefits, quite honestly, is you get a better perspective. If you're doing just defense work or just plaintiff's work, I think you could have a tendency to get more blinders on.
Right.
And not necessarily evaluate a case. Your mindset's always the same. But doing plaintiff's work and defense work, I think, is more of a good balance for actually looking for the strengths or the weaknesses of a given case.
And when you were in law school, did you know you wanted to go into litigation?
Not necessarily. I actually went to law school, as was referenced in the article, because at that point I wanted to join the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
And back then there were only two ways to do that. You had to be an accountant. Or a lawyer back in the day.
Right.
And
now they just let anyone.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't go that far. Hey,
that's
Lori said that, not Joel.
That's not a comment on the FBI. We love the FBI.
That we do. So anyway, that's why I initially went to law school. And then I actually, in between second and third year, I ended up clerking for Judge Phyllis Beck on the Superior Court.
Mm-hmm.
She introduced me to a couple of folks there. And then I was fortunate enough to get a pretty nice offer out of law school to the Dilworth Paxson firm in Philadelphia, which back then, from my perspective, I'm really reticent to say good, best, whatever, but that was, I think, back then, the preeminent litigation firm in the city.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Do you think that, other than than you guys, do they still have that?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it was small. Back then, again, we were talking 1986, so it was a while ago. And again, still very solid firm, etc. But I think they're about maybe 125 lawyers. Back then they were 220 or there. But size isn't everything. Still very capable people there.
Right.
But back in the day, I think they really had really stellar litigators from which it was a great opportunity to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I think as referenced, I can't remember if it was in the article or not, but I was fortunate enough that they threw me right into the mix. I'm not a library research guy. It's not my personality. It's not my forte. But before I found out if I even passed the bar, they were sending me out to depositions.
Really?
To do depositions.
So
to take
you start.
Them.
You started with them
right out of law school.
Before you got the passed the bar exam.
Yeah.
So you're studying for the bar.
Correct. You take the bar.
So what year did you graduate from law school?
1986.
So this is the summer of 86 before you take the bar in July.
Well, not to start there, right then and there, because I studied for that during that summer. I think I started, though. I started in mid-August. That's one of the earlier ones because a lot of the other – there was a class of six at Dilworth at that point. They had all been at the previous summer program. I was new to the organization, mm-hmm. so I wanted to get in there early on and get my legs beneath me and all that stuff. So I think I started something like August 17th of 86.
So you've taken the bar,
in July.
You don't know whether you passed.
Correct.
Yeah.
So you're off and running. Because back then, it's quicker now than my understanding. Back then, you didn't find out till mid-November
Yeah.
whether you passed the bar or not.
Yeah, it's probably a lot quicker.
Oh, it is now. Yeah, because you used to get a letter. You find out in a letter, snail mail. Now you just go online, you sign in, and you find out if you pass.
Yeah, now they tell you the day that they're going to that, which I hated that, by the way. So I took the bar in July of 1996.
Uh-huh.
And I was already one and done. Like, I'm not taking it a second time. Right, and this is, you know, around the time when, remember, John Kennedy? I'm like, well, he flunked it like 4 or 5 times. How am I going to do?
Well, it's funny because I took PA in 86, and I took Florida in 91. So I did take it a second bar in 91. But I'm going to let you know on a secret that I didn't tell many people. I befriended another lawyer. His name is Greg Cirillo. He's still with the Dilworth firm. He's vice chairman of the Dilworth firm. His dad, Judge Vincent Cirillo, was the president judge of the Superior Court.
Wow.
So you clerked for
the Superior Court judge, right?
That was Judge Phyllis Beck, correct, right. During the summer.
Yeah.
But Judge Vincent Cirillo, took a liking to me. I was over their house for dinner and pasta. Right. He bring me to the Italian social club. So he got, I was Greg's friend, so he ended up bringing me into the family fold, so to speak. So he actually let us know 2 weeks before everybody else, he found out that we passed the bar. So we couldn't tell anybody, right? We were sitting, Greg and I were sitting like, we had to fake it a little bit. But we were like, nice and relaxed. We found out like the end of October that we had passed the bar. So I was fortunate enough to get that.
I have a story to tell you too.
Okay.
So I'm not going to use any names.
Right.
But so I take it in July. And I'm hearing that they're going to post the results like on this day. I don't know when it was August, September, whatever it was.
Right.
And I'm like, man, like, I can't believe that they basically inform everyone before they inform anyone. Right. So I'm like, well, what if I flunk? So I'm going to be like, all my family and friends and all these people I know, they're all going to jump on there and look. This is in my mind.
For
I don't think anyone cares. Yeah, right.
Right. Right.
So I'm like, if all those people jump on there and my name's not on there, they're going to know I flunked. So I said, I can't have that. So I contacted someone who contacted someone to find out whether I passed or not. And this is like the day before. And that person went back to the person I asked and said, tell him he's going to be happy.
There you go.
So the guy calls me and said, they said you're going to be happy. And I'm like, what does that mean?
I'm sure you're right.
That's how paranoid I was.
Uh-huh.
Like, what does that mean? Did they say I passed?
Right, right.
No, they just said you're going to be happy. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything.
Like, that's funny.
For all I know, they could have thought that I was going to be happy that I wasn't going to be in it.
What year did you take it again?
96.
Got it.
Yeah. And that whole bar exam, I assume it was the same way when you took it 10 years earlier. One day of multiple choice,
correct.
One day of essay. Essays are the first day.
I even forget which order, but I know if you get a certain number on the multiple choice, they don't even bother reading your essays.
Right. So no, they do now.
I mean,
well, I don't know if they do now, but they did when I took
it. Got it.
So first day is the essays, and second day is multiple choice. So we go to this hotel in Harrisburg, it's no longer there, and there's, I don't know how many kids are taking this, 400, 500. It's like the room's packed.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big banquet room, and they have tables set up. And I'm right, so there's a wall in front of me. So there's no more kids in front of me. There's a wall.
That's smart.
Put them in a line of people. So they, start the exams. And this guy sitting next to me, he reads and whispers.
Oh, great.
So he's going, and I'm like,
just what you need.
I'm like, I'm trying to read, and he's reading, and we're not like synced up, so I can hear him whispering, and I'm trying to focus on the exam, and I'm like,
talk about distracting. Huh?
I'm trying to make eye contact with a proctor, and a proctor walks over, and I'm like, and they just put their arms up and they walk away. So the way that day goes, there's a halftime. So
it was
3 hours, then a halftime, and then 3 more hours.
Right.
So as soon as they said, all right, pencils down, I looked over at this guy, and I said, hey, man, you know you're whispering when you're reading? And he goes, oh, yeah, that's just a habit of mine. And I said, you need to break that habit by the second.
Did he?
He didn't. I didn't hear a peep out of him. I also went across the street and got some earplugs.
Yeah, that helps.
Oh, my gosh. That was like, You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, how annoying could that be?
This is what I'm going to put up with this guy whispering all day?
Yeah, it's enough pressure anyway, with the timing component of it and everything there. This guy's like distracting you.
Yeah, I didn't think that was going to had anywhere near the level of preparation for it that I thought that, you know, most, because I was working. Like, I was, getting up in the morning and getting to work by 7, taking the bar review class at 5, studying at a hotel till 1 o'clock in the morning, and going home, getting a few hours sleep and starting it over.
Yeah.
That was like the worst summer of my life.
I bet.
But the good news was I had a job, so I wasn't really intending to be an attorney. So there wasn't like an incredible amount of pressure like I'm sure you felt, because you got a job.
Yeah. And at that point, don't forget, I'm married already, man, because I got married between the second and third year of law school. Right?
What, are you crazy?
Maybe.
Well, if you knew his wife, Jean, she's spectacular.
That's nice. Thank you.
That's a person you definitely want to marry as soon as you can before she changes her mind. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Delaware County. I was born actually in Philadelphia, the Winfield Delco section specifically.
So what area of Delco?
South. Well, is it in the
like
Broomall.
What town?
Broomall. Okay. Yeah, Broomall specifically.
So wait, you were born where?
In Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And in the city. I was there in the city, in Winfield section of the city, up until I went through kindergarten and first grade there, and then in between first grade and second grade is when we moved to Broomall in Delaware County.
And what did your parents do?
My dad was a CPA.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And my mom was an administrative assistant. She worked for like a retirement community out there doing like administrative roles.
Mm-hmm. And her any siblings or?
Younger sister who is a special ed teacher. She's been down in Florida and actually just retired after, I think, 35 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Younger sister.
Younger sister. And yeah. She's retired already.
Done.
Well, I mean, you know, teachers, that's what they do.
Yeah.
So are your parents, either of them, still around?
Yeah, I'm so fortunate that they're both still around.
Really?
Just turned 90 and my mom just turned 88.
Wow.
They are down in Florida at a place called Tequesta.
What town?
Tequesta.
Oh, Tequesta's town.
It's immediately west of Jupiter.
Okay.
So they're down that way on the East Coast. Again, about 20 minutes from my sister.
Right.
So thankfully she's there to get and do some, you know, assistance when needed.
So how are they doing physically?
Relatively good. Mom's having a couple issues right now, mobility wise, etc.
Well, I'm having a couple issues.
Yeah. Right. Aren't we all right?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You know, 1988.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Still together.
Were they like high school sweethearts or?
No, but they've been married since 1958. So it's long run.
So when you moved from the city out to the suburbs,
right,
you know, did dad get a big promotion and moving on up or?
Well, that was his firm. He had his own firm. It was like Frank and Cohen. They were actually located right in Ardmore on Lancaster Avenue.
And were they doing like personal tax returns or business stuff?
Across the board, to my recollection. It was a smaller place, maybe 5 or 6.
Now, did you ever think about getting into that business?
No.
No. It's just accounting wasn't your thing.
It was not my thing.
What was your thing? What subject matters did you most appreciate either in high school or college? Let me add, when you went to college, were you thinking about law school or did that develop at some point?
It developed at some point during the college career. I went to the University of Delaware, was a political science, criminal justice, you know, major. So it's kind of that.
You were a blue hen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good run down there.
Yeah.
So I was there from 79 to 83. It is. Yeah. And it was nice. It was far enough away from home that it had some independence, but it wasn't so far.
It wasn't
that it was like a trek to get home or if I needed to or wanted to.
Right.
You know?
So, Blue Hen.
Yep.
Any great football while you're there?
Yeah, very. So, yeah, some real good football.
Yeah.
Yeah, real good football.
I know they've had some good teams and
some
good players.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's their most famous alum?
Is that a question or like a quiz?
From a football standpoint, not
Casey Keeler. I mean, you know, yeah, there's a few. Tubby Raymond was down there. He was the coach when I was there.
Wasn't Flacco?
Yeah, he was. He was not there at the same time I was though.
And the other guy that was with the Raiders for a while, quarterback.
Oh well, Gannon.
Yeah, Rich.
Yeah, Gannon. Gannon was there too. Yeah,
yeah. There's two big blue hens.
Yeah.
What were your favorite subjects in high school, college? Were you more of a liberal arts guy, or were you?
I always liked, current events.
Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly, I still do. International relations, that kind of stuff. Big news guy.
Mm-hmm. And what was your major?
Political science and criminal justice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I took I started as a biology guy. Thought I was going to be a dentist.
Really?
Then I met organic chemistry and changed my mind.
Yeah, I'm out.
And then became economics, but also picked up a minor in math and communication.
Okay.
So the communications was really accidental, but I had this class. It was considered a communications class. It was taught by a guy by the name of Theodore Wendt, W-E-N-D-T. And it was called Presidential Rhetoric. And it was there was Presidential Rhetoric 1 and Presidential Rhetoric 2. Each were a three-credit class. And after I took one, I was like, I'm taking the other one.
I'm surprised there's only two.
Yeah. Well, I think there may have been more
as
time went on.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is, you know, not in the mid-80s. And Presret 1 started with Kennedy, maybe Eisenhower, maybe the end of Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, and I think a little bit of Nixon. And then Presret 2 was Nixon and Carter and Reagan.
Okay.
And it was the best class of all time.
Yeah, tell me about that. When you say presidential rhetoric, what was specifically?
It was like analyzing speeches and moments in time when the speeches were written and how meaningful they were and, you know, their delivery and, you know, the whole thing. So
okay.
it was kind of a history class and kind of a communications class and kind of a political science class all wrapped into one. It was.
I think I would have liked that, too. That sounds interesting.
I'm telling you. And this guy was a great professor. And he was theatrical.
Uh-huh.
And he would come in to... So this was... There would be like 500 kids in this class. So it was always done in the David Lawrence Auditorium, if anyone, the pit guy, you know what that is. And it was one of their bigger rooms. And it was like a theater-type setting. So you come in up here...
Like an amphitheater.
Walk down to,
yeah.
Yeah, like an amphitheater. Yeah.
Yep.
And he had these two assistants, women... who would stand on one side of the stage or the other. And he would come into class. He was always the last one in. And in the back, doors would open, and everyone turned around. And he would have like a trench coat on. And he would walk down, ceremoniously walk down, get up onto the stage, and turn around, and one of the women would take the...
Get out.
It was crazy.
It's like a wrestler.
It was very theatrical. But then what he ended up saying, like you were on the edge of your seat. Because it was such an interesting class.
That's wild that he had to move into it.
He just passed away a few years ago. Uh-huh. I you know, kept track of him here and there.
Any follow-up with him after
he left? No. I only ever had follow-up with one of my professors, a guy by the name of Steve Houston, who was a good economics professor, and stayed in touch with him for a little bit of time. But
got it.
Did you keep in touch with any of your... How about law school professors? Did you keep in touch with any of them?
Nah. Once I was done, I was pretty much done.
I do. And I'm not a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
I keep in touch with them.
Yeah, no, I really don't.
So do you do anything with Widener?
Nope.
You went to the Widener in Delaware, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, back then, it was called Delaware Law School.
Right.
And then, you know, whenever the transition was, Widener University School of Law.
Yeah. So you don't have any affiliation with the school anymore? They don't make you their distinguished alumni or anything like that?
No. I really have not interacted with them after I left.
So that, you know, that Widener in Harrisburg, they have... They used to have a distinguished alumni and then a distinguished young alumni. I did get that.
Nice. Good.
But all these years later, I'm still waiting for the distinguished alumni.
Yeah. You're still young.
They won't cough it up. So if you're listening to me, Andre Cummings or Christian Johnson, any of them, you know, like pass it on. And maybe mention Joel Frank to your counterparts down at Widener.
There we go.
Widener in Delaware.
Maybe we'll do a twofer. Maybe we can do a twofer.
I mean, like, so if you get on the Widener Delaware website, do they have, like, do they list all their distinguished alumni?
I don't know.
Did you ever get on there and look?
No.
They almost have.
I'm telling you, Rory, once I was done with law school, I was like moving on to the professional world. And
yeah, but it's a good thing for them. I mean,
sure.
you're the chairman and managing partner of the biggest law firm in Westchester?
Yeah, in Chester County, correct.
Yeah, in Chester County.
Yeah.
And, you know, the work that you guys are doing across the state, like, I would imagine they would want to brag about that.
Well, you know, I can't tell you they haven't reached out on occasion. It's just that I haven't really necessarily, you know, gotten back to them.
So when they do reach out and they say, how important was law school to you? Do you go, eh? Or do you say, I wouldn't be me without it?
Yeah, really, the latter. If I was to respond, I'd say the latter.
Right? Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, it's just self-preservation. That's the way
correct.
You go.
Correct.
So you... Move to Delco.
Yep.
You go to Delaware. You go to Widener.
Yep.
You and Jane get married a couple years into law school.
Correct.
And where do you guys settle?
We went a little further west in the Newtown Square, which is adjacent to Broomall. So actually, you know what? I lied to you. We actually first got a place in Upper Darby, mm-hmm. an apartment. And then we moved to we bought a townhouse in Newtown Square. We were there before we moved to Westchester.
Newtown Square is a great place.
It is, yeah. So we were there with Westchester from 92 until 2019. And then we moved to Glenmore, where you're familiar. You're familiar with the house in Glenmore.
Wait, so you were in that townhouse until...
No. That was in Newtown Square. That was only for, like, I think maybe 4 years, 5 years.
Okay.
Then we moved to Westchester.
Okay.
West Goshen in Westchester, right. Mailing address. And then, as you know, Glenmore in 2019.
Yeah. Scott, you should see this guy's house. Beautiful.
I'd love it.
I mean, I think I would... not that I'm a fly fisherman. I think I would try to be a fly fisherman every day. I'd be out there in the morning, cup of coffee, throw a couple lines in.
It's nice. Yeah, just to give a context for the audience, I mean, it's right on the east branch of the Brandywine, and I open up my front door, and it's probably, 10 steps to the east branch of the Brandywine. And
you do have people that fish that area, right?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
So if they're in the boundary of your property, do you say anything or do you?
No, I let them. I actually sign a form at the beginning of every trout season fishing season. Excuse me, that allows them to come. Yeah, to come on.
So do you have riparian rights? Is that what it is?
Well, apparently you end up we own the property and then to the middle of the creek.
Okay,
is what technically
and
is
within
our
the boundaries of the property to the middle of the creek.
Correct. Yeah, but it's pretty cool gig. Like you said, you've seen it. It's very peaceful. It's very tranquil. But at the same time, it's like only a half an hour from my place. I take Creek Road all the way down.
Into the office. Westchester.
To Westchester. Yeah, it's a half hour commute.
And you guys also have a Philly office.
Yeah, and correct.
Where's that in Philly?
It's at 16th and Market.
Okay.
We're Philly. We're Newtown Square, Cherry Hill,
Oxford. Oh, you have more than those two.
Oh, yeah. Oxford in the southern part of Chester County. We also opened up recently, that's our most recent office, is in Wilmington as well.
So when you first got the lamb, so what year is this?
I got the lamb in 97. I was at Dilworth from 86 through end of 96. I started January 4th of 97 at Lamb Mackerel.
So you're at Dilworth for 11-ish years?
Yeah, 10 years, yeah.
And you go to lamb and you've been there ever since?
Ever since, yep.
And how many years is that?
It'll be since you and I do some quick massives in 97, so 28 years, right?
That sound right?
Yeah.
Or is it 38?
Nah.
28?
28.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I did 10 years at Philly first, right?
Yeah. So 38, 39 years of practicing law, two places.
Yes.
So when you went to Lamb, did they recruit you?
To an extent, yes. I mean, initially when I was... Thinking, I was kind of doing that commute into Philadelphia, and the firm, the previous firm where I was, wasn't the same firm as when I joined. So I knew that was like kind of like Lamb Mackerel, from my perspective, was really, even back then, like the firm in Chester County. We were living in Chester County at that point in time. So I forget how they initially reached out. I don't think it was a recommendation. I think there's a judge. It's coming back to me now. I think there's Judge Ben Lerner. Worked with me at Dilworth. He somehow had a connection with the Lamb firm, so that's how I initially got out there. And then because I was a partner,
so you were a partner at Dilworth. How long did it take you to make partner?
I think 8 years.
Okay,
8 years, 9 years, maybe.
Was that the general track, or was that a little bit faster than the general?
I think it was the general track then. Yeah. So because I was partner there. They bought me in as a partner or shareholder at Lamb Mackerel.
Right.
So I didn't have to.
And at that time, was Lamb bigger than Dilworth?
Oh, no.
Much smaller?
Oh, yeah. At that point, I think I was like the 18th lawyer.
Wow.
At Lamb Mackerel at the time.
And did they only have the Westchester location
Correct.
At that point?
Correct.
So when did you become, so you get there in 97?
Yes.
When did you become senior partner?
I became managing partner, I think, like 15 or 16 years ago.
Okay.
And then...
So that's 13 years in, just in case you're keen.
And then when Bill Lamb retired about 5 years ago. I took on the additional title of chairman of the firm as well, although quite honestly, what I was doing as managing partner, especially later in the term as managing partner, there weren't any additional responsibilities, quite honestly, as chairman. Just so the figurehead for the outside community, though.
So was he the founding?
Yeah, it goes back. The firm itself was started in 1948. Ted O'Neill was, I guess, Commonwealth Court judge. You know, he and McAleen, now Jim, you know, Bill Lamb, Jim McAleen, the two, you know, named partners now. There were a couple others along the way, but one left to take the bench. Another one, you know, specifically retired relatively earlier on. So it was that name for, you know, since, I don't know exactly since when, but ever since I've been there.
Since you've been there.
Yeah, sure.
And so did the growth of the firm start after you became managing partner?
I think so. I had a different, you know, and this is not good or bad necessarily, yeah, but I had a different mentality, I think.
A little more aggressive, a little more.
Yeah, expansive, yeah, sure, et cetera. Why not? And yeah, the Atlanta McAleen, again, yeah, they're comfortable where we were. Everyone was making a nice living, but I had different visions, quite honestly. And what's been really nice about it, quite honestly, is one of the things I'm most proud about is we don't go like recruiting from other firms or poaching anyone, you know, but if someone approaches us because they're unhappy where they were, or they think it's, you know, we're a better fit, then I'll certainly, you know, then I'll certainly talk to them.
Right.
And that's really where we've seen our growth. I mean, people have come into us from a lateral standpoint. We've made a concentrated effort to kind of build our lower ranks as well, the associate ranks. So yeah, we're up to 55 lawyers now, with probably another one joining us in July and another one scheduled to join us in September.
That's 55 across all the those board locations.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How many do you have in Westchester?
Most of us are in Westchester. Yeah. I forget the exact count, Rory. Maybe 37, 38 of the 55 are in Westchester.
So all the satellite offices. I don't want to call them satellites.
No, I mean, maybe four or five, you know, three in one, four in another, that kind of stuff.
And do they do all the same types of stuff, or are there some specialties going on in the periphery?
Yeah, periphery. Like for the one Newtown Square office, they do a lot of educational law, represent a couple different local universities, et cetera. The one in Philadelphia, the group in Philadelphia, strictly litigation. Down in Oxford, it's more estates and municipal law related. And in Wilmington, really, that was a...
That's your newest one, Wilmington?
It is. Yeah. It is. And that's staffed on occasion based on client need.
I really like that Wilmington area.
Yes.
I do.
I think there's opportunity.
We're not in there right now, but...
right now is the operative phrase there, right?
Yeah, right now. Well, you know, I consider that part of the greater Philadelphia metro area.
Sure, absolutely.
And as you know, by being a board member of MidPen Bank, we're doing our best to penetrate that market over the last 7 or 8 years, and... You got a long way to go, but, you know, picking up a great bank like William Penn a little earlier this year was a good start.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely made progress. Not as much as we want down there, but it takes time. It's very, as you know, it's one of the more competitive areas in the Commonwealth, right, in the state, in the Southeast. So to make inroads is a little bit more difficult than elsewhere.
So you came to MidPen by virtue of our acquisition of First Priority, which was done in 2018, and you had just joined that board.
Yeah, I think maybe 2 years.
Yeah. And did they come to you?
Or yes.
How did you find your way to First Priority?
To my recollection, they were looking for somebody with a network in Chester County specifically. And I forget who actually approached me to join that board.
Was it Mackie McLean?
No. I don't know if it was Sparks, you know, Dave Sparks himself or someone else. I don't really recall how that, you know, came to fruition. But, I mean, they're looking for somebody with, you know, a network, you know, in the business community. I'm not sure that, you know, being a lawyer per se drove that decision or drove that outreach to me. It may have.
You know, I think that banks and financial institutions love having lawyers on their board because there's, you know, so much of what we do has legal implications. So... You know, having that type of advice on a board is a great thing, right?
Yep.
But you're not just a holding company board member, you're a bank board member too. So you're one of the unique people that, so you have this expertise in law, but you're also really tied into the business community.
Fortunately.
You have great relationships. And that's not because of your work as a lawyer. Like, let's talk about some of the things that you do. I know you're actively involved in the chamber.
Yeah, yeah. I've been fortunate enough to go ahead and, you know, it was a conscious effort to become involved. But quite honestly, I like it. I like being out in the community. I like meeting new people, et cetera.
You like making connections.
Absolutely.
You know, not just, you know, you connecting with someone. You like connecting
very others. Much so. Yeah. Very much so. And a lot of times, too, I feel like I'm like a semi-employment agency because, you know, somebody needs somebody to work, you know, connecting them that way. But, yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be on, you know, several, you know, boards, you know, obviously, you know, the Mid-Penn, which is, by the way, you know, love working with you, love working with the other board members. I mean, I tell people out in the community, it's like just wholesome, good, solid people.
Right.
You know, so again, I believe in it. So it's easy to get and talk about.
You know, it's, I think we've been very fortunate with our board, but more as importantly with our employees. Like we've got,
culture is everything.
Man. It is.
Culture is so key. Yeah. That's one of, again, the things I'm so proud about. When I talked about earlier, people are coming to us, other lawyers, to join the firm because they see what we have going on.
Right.
You know, we have very, very, very few people leave that, you know, and you see other firms are jumping from here to there. It's like, yeah, what's the best situation of the day? And fortunately, we don't have that.
Yeah, and I suspect that you don't even want to recruit from other firms because, and we have that same issue. Like, I would much rather hire someone out of high school or college, you know, put them through an educational program that's got, you know, handles downstairs in the university and, you know, get them into whatever, you know, we got so many different types of positions at the company, than going and hiring someone who was trained to do it some other way, who would have to acclimate to our culture. Because our, like, I said this in front of the employees a couple months ago. I said, this isn't for everyone. Like we have a,
correct.
Now if you come here and you like the culture, this is absolutely the place for you. But it's not for everyone. And sometimes hiring what I call free agents is tough.
Yeah, I view it differently. I mean, not necessarily differently, but not exactly the same way. Because you want people rowing, my you know, thought process, you want people rolling in the same direction, but you don't want clones of one another. Not that you're suggesting that.
No.
Not that you're suggesting that. Exactly. But so sometimes, you know, an infusion of a different, you know, way, and someone comes in as a lateral, it's like, oh, you know what? Hey, that's a good way, you know, good idea doing it that way, where I never would have thought of that. So there's actually potentially some upside to that.
So we end up getting free agents by a lot of our acquisitions. Earlier in the board meeting today, we were talking about the very first deal we did and the people that we got from that, Paul Spiegel and Angie Kern, and we got some really nice, Paula Neidig and Sandy Begg. We got some really good employees who are still here today, making a big difference. And our second deal was Scottsdale. Not as many people from that transaction because a lot of them ended up retiring. First Priority, we picked up Ray Mincarelli.
Yep.
And Matt Miller and, you know, some really good pieces on the retail side, and the same thing with Riverview, and the same thing with Brunswick. And so we get a lot of free agents that way. But we have recruited Heather Hall,
who,
you know, is Joan Dickinson.
Yeah.
We recruited her.
All studs.
All studs. Jordan Space.
Yeah.
So we've been successful in recruiting executives, but I think mostly we build them, you know, from the ground up. And I just think that's an easier way.
Yeah. I like doing it both ways, quite honestly.
Yeah, you have to do it both ways. Yeah. So I always liken it to, I know you're a big baseball fan, and I always liken it to the Yankees. Because Steinbrenner in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, fell in love with all free agents and didn't win a World Series for a long time.
Yep.
And then the Mets came along in the late 70s, and they were all farm system. And they had some really good players, but they weren't good enough to get to the next level until they picked up who? Keith Hernandez.
Okay. All right.
That was
first
a big,
baseman.
First big signing. And then that led to Gary Carter. And then they
it's like dominoes. Right.
But they're still like they have this great farm system and they're getting Darryl Strawberry and Doc Gooden and so
well, that's the analogy. They want to do like the free agency with the farm system.
Absolutely.
Right.
So emphasize the farm system, but you got to supplement that with some smart free agents. And, you know, that's kind of the way that we've run this company. And it's kind of the way we've grown this company too.
Yep.
We always wanted to be, you know, good organic bankers. We want to be able to, you know, go in the markets and grow. But you've got to do some smart M&A too.
Yeah. And not only that, I mean, again, another analogy between, you know, the bank and my firm, et cetera, is like, you know, it's being out there in the community.
Right.
Right. I mean, one of the page, you know, if you look on our website, one of the pages of, that I'm most proud about is, you know, our philanthropic activity.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean just, you know, writing checks. It means, right, you know, hours, you know.
Does mean writing out checks, exactly, but not only writing checks.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So it's just putting part of the community. If you're in a service organization like a bank or, mm-hmm, a law firm, I think it's incumbent upon you to get out there and give back time and money, quite honestly.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. So,
I mean, if you're getting most of your customers from an area, which I suspect you are, you're probably getting most of your customers from the greater Philadelphia metro area. If you want to be long-term sustainable, you got to give back to that community.
Correct.
And
that's not to kid ourselves. No, you're making relationships along the way.
Right.
Right. Again, getting back, like, you know, on the, I was, you know, the chair for 16 years. I was on the Chester County Chamber Board. Two of those, mm-hmm, years, I was the chair. Right. Then, you know, we talked about, you know, being a commissioner on the Athletic Commission. Again, have met people in conjunction with that. Philadelphia Zoo Board,
you know,
has been, you know, I love that. Unfortunately, I'm coming to the end of my third 3-year term.
I have to rotate off.
Yeah, all I could do is three-year terms.
Although, man, Jody's going to
try to work something there.
she circles that gala that you have every year.
Well, it's coming up again. I'll give you the date. I'm still good for another year or so. And then also Alice's Lemonade Stand Foundation. I was on
board. So you're not on that anymore?
I'm emeritus. I just rotated off at the beginning of this year, but I was on that for like 14, 15 years.
You know, so did you fight that like all your career? Because you probably got asked to join, you know, 10 times as many boards as you actually joined, right?
Oh, 10 times, point taken. Yeah. But yeah, you have to get ahead. Again, so still, you have a home life you need to attend to.
Exactly.
Right?
Kids, and you have a practice to get around.
Exactly. Correct. So yeah, you have to go ahead and
manage.
I like being, you know me. Yeah, I like being busy, right?
Right.
I mean, I really do. After a long weekend, we talked about it, I have a lot of outside interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
But after a long weekend, I'm like, okay, I'm like ready, a little skitsy, getting ready to get back into the fray again.
Right.
You know? And I can relax and all that, but it's like, okay, what's the next thing we got going here? You know?
So Scott, he has a place down in Ocean City, same place Jody and I are fortunate to have one, and it's about 4.5 miles.
Yeah, right.
Away. So sometimes
from our respective houses.
Now, he never comes down to my beach, but I probably for good reason. But I'll walk 4.5 miles up to his place, play a little bocce ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Hang out,
drink a couple waters, and you know whatever else.
That's because you're in training.
And then I walk 4.5 miles back.
Yeah, if I was in training, maybe I'd come see you. You're in training, so you come see me.
Well, you're always in training.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it's not for walking across the Grand Canyon, but. So how did you pick and choose the organization? So like Alex's Lemonade Stand is obviously benefits youth.
Yeah, it's the eradication of pediatric cancer specifically.
Right. Which,
huge.
Who can't get behind that, yeah, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, one of those situations. Mary Stengel Austin is the one that, you know, introduced me to that. She was the head of Tierney,
mm-hmm,
big communications company in Philadelphia. Now is on Glenn Mead's board, Philadelphia Inquirer's board.
Right.
She's the one who kind of asked me to come to that initial, to be exposed to that. And as Tom Cruise says in whatever the hell movie that was, you know, you had me at hello. I mean, right, once they gave that presentation.
Yeah. Like, how do you say no to that?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really a special organization. It was formed by Liz and Jay Scott, mm-hmm, whose daughter Alex, whom the foundation is named after, unfortunately passed away from glioblastoma. But, mm-hmm, in conjunction with that, she formed had a lemonade stand. And actually, on her own, raised like $1 million over time. And then it just blossomed from there. I think now the organization is doing about like $32 million a year.
Wow.
And doing such a good job as far as like dispersing it out to like really key areas, especially in today's world where there's governmental cutbacks,
mm-hmm,
you know, on research, funding for research, et cetera. One of the cool things about being on that board is they gave us the opportunity to go ahead and reach out to a couple of recipients of different grants. So as a board member, you'd be able to call up. I remember calling a couple people in Texas. you know, talking about, hey, look, you just, I'm hired Joel Frank, board member of Alex Eliminate. So I'll let you know that you're the recipient of a $500,000 grant over 2 years to enable your research to continue. So, you know, some of them cried, some of them screamed, some of them gasped. But it was kind of cool to see that how important it was to them, the recipients of those grants, to enable them to carry on their important work.
Look, you know, when you're giving money to research doctors, and we give much less than that to Penn Medicine.
Yep.
Dr. Payal Shah and the head of the Bosser Center, Susan Domchak, they are so appreciative. And I mean, we're giving them much less than $500,000, but they're so appreciative. They you know, and she actually told me the reason they're so appreciative is because she worked for Penn Medicine. Like, you got to pay your way.
Yep.
And so she's got to do stuff for Penn that helps them, you know, make money. But if she gets money given to her, then she doesn't have to do that, or she doesn't have to sit around and write grant applications,
yep,
which take a long time. So that is, it's really meaningful stuff. And, you know, it is disappointing to me. Like, I'm all for government efficiency. I think our government is extremely inefficient. And I think it's been for a long time.
It's bloated.
Yeah, it's bloated, and it's probably been bloated back to, like, the, you know, the creation of the military-industrial complex, whatever. I mean, I remember, you know, you were around in the early 80s, and remember with the, you know, $500 toilet seats and, you know, everything.
Absolutely.
So I'm all for fixing that. But I'm not for, you know, denying research grants to cancer doctors and... it's just not it. Not a, that's a good use of our tax money.
Yeah, could be tough. Agreed. Yeah, could be tough.
So, you know, doing work like that with Alex's Lemonade Stand is critically important.
Yep. Yeah, I got a lot of happiness as far as, you know, being able to contribute a little bit, you know, the little bit that I did.
Now, was that organization started in Philly, or was that just a chapter?
I believe it was started in Philly. I mean, they lived up in Connecticut, mm-hmm, when Alex was first diagnosed, and then moved down here for treatment at CHOP. So that's where, and then right, really the headquarters down here, the headquarters ended up being in the Winfield section of Philadelphia, or Ardmore.
Is CHOP considered one of the better pediatric cancer?
Yeah, yeah. There's like five or six throughout the country.
Is that Danny Thomas one? Is that still?
Well, that is that one. I forget the name of it. That's, I'll say a competitor.
Is that Miracle all doing good Miracle, work? Children's Miracle Network? Is that what that was? No.
St. Jude.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even call it a competitor because everyone's in it for the right reasons, right, to get, you know, the kids treated properly, mm-hmm, and all, but. Yeah, they're not a part of that. But I know that, you know, Alex is specifically, you know, spreads the wealth out, you know, across the country. And it's, you know, there's more and more, even though headquartered in the Southeast PA, there's now different, you know, beach fronts, if you will, various parts throughout the United States. And there's even some international connections now.
So how long were you on that board?
15, 16 years.
Wow.
And I served as chair of that, I think, for about 4 or 5 years as well.
So did you cycle off that, or did you just say?
It was probably time.
Give someone else a chance.
Any organization, you want some fresh blood, mm-hmm, in there, fresh thoughts, et cetera. And, you know, a lot of the bylaws require, you know, have maximize a certain number of directors. So after 15, 16 years, maybe even before, it was just time to get some new blood.
So in, you know, weighing that Alex's against the zoo or the chamber, like what – which board have you felt that you've made the biggest impact and had the most enjoyment serving?
Yeah, I'm not trying to tap dance with you. I enjoyed each one of them, mm-hmm, that I've gone ahead and served on. I feel fortunate enough to be asked to serve on it. I you know, garnered certain pluses from some versus others, et cetera. But each one I've really enjoyed. I've enjoyed the run. I really have.
I think I know the answer to this, but did you do those things because you felt compelled to do those things, like to give back to the community? Or did you do those things to, you know, have more people know who Joel Frank is?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. Like, for example, Alex's Lemonade. That was not like a, you know who Joel Frank is. That's right, kind of just doing a philanthropic thing in the cause, a worthwhile cause. Mm-hmm. The Chester County Chamber.
That's a different story.
Yeah. You know, and I'd say the zoo's a hybrid.
Right.
Quite honestly. You know, I've always been an animal guy, even since I was a kid. I was very excited to be asked to, you know, join that board by the former president and CEO, Vic DeJuan, who was a banker prior to becoming the president and CEO of the Philadelphia Zoo. So that was kind of like a hybrid. I mean, I made some connections on there from a business standpoint. But again, it was more for the, you know, the animals. I was been, like I said, always an animal guy, conservation, real important, et cetera. Mm-hmm. One of the cool things on that, Rory, is I serve as chair of the Programs and Initiatives Committee on the Philadelphia Zoo Board. And that involves going out in the community. And the surrounding community is not necessarily well off. But you know, bringing those kids in, getting educational programs up and running in the surrounding community.
They do summer camps and things like that.
Yeah, stuff like that, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Even working with the school district, different schools surrounding it, the zoo itself, the zoo property. So that's been rewarding as well.
When I was a kid and growing up in the city of Harrisburg, they had a thing called the Outdoor Education Center, which I think was up off of Dairy Street, which is probably all developed now and it's no longer around, but like they would take us, you know, city kids, take us and show us what woods were and like little animals and things like that. It was like the, one of the most amazing days. I'll never forget this. So they gave us a little sapling, you know, like here's your gift. And we get on the school bus and headed back and everyone's throwing them out the window.
Oh, jeez.
Everyone except my best friend, Jimmy Burns, who lives down in Florida now.
Right.
He took that thing home and planted it in front of his house. Now, these are all like, you know, kind of row homes. The little patch of dirt in front of his house, he put that tree. If you go down 19th Street in Harrisburg, and I can't remember what his address was, that tree still
That's cool.
It's like
that's
taller, cool. Taller than the house. So, you know, those things are really beneficial. Like programs for kids, whether it's during the school year, over the summer.
Yeah, like you said, exposing them to experiences that they never would have otherwise experienced.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is such great stuff.
Yeah.
So how are you mentoring young people? Like what do you, as Lamb, McElane, and as Joel Frank, like how are you bringing on the next generation? Like what all do you do there?
Really helping them get placed. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things I tell everyone, you know, from me down to the first year associate who's coming on board is, you know, find something in the community that you like. We never foist a specific spot on someone. But again, getting back to that theme, it's incumbent as a service industry to giving back to the community. Find something you like and go ahead and start, you know, making those inroads right now. You know, join something to give back. And, you know, listen, you may not be able to go ahead and contribute all that much either financially, especially as a youngest lawyer, whatever the case may be, paying off loans, et cetera. But, you know, plant those seeds now, get involved. And then, you know, you can foster those relationships and contribute more as you develop as a person and gain more and more experience.
Do you find that a lot of the kids that you're hiring out of college, out of law school, are they saddled down with a lot of debt? Are they saddled with undergraduate loans and law school loans? Or
in all honesty, I don't ask that question. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if they were, you know, their family situation enables them to go ahead and, you know, pay the freight also or, you know, along the way or whether they have loans. I don't know.
And do you guys have any type of mentor program where you take your, you know, the associates that you're going to hire this year, first years, do you pair them up with, you know, someone that's been around a little bit?
Well, yeah, we have a younger partner, a point person who we go ahead and try to, you know, say, look, obviously I try to be always available, but if I'm not available or it's not a proper, you know, or you're not comfortable talking to me directly. There's a woman, her name is Katie Liddell. She's a recent partner.
Yeah.
Her mom used to be with M&T Bank.
Right.
Kristen Liddell.
She's no longer?
No, I think she retired.
She retired?
Yeah, she retired. But Katie's like that person now, serving that role. Then we also internally.
She just got some good notoriety, right?
Yeah, she did. Correct.
What did she get?
One of the recognitions, I think, from the chamber.
Yeah.
Board, as a matter of fact.
You're
correct.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, up and coming. Or so there's something.
Yeah.
Women of Achievement, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very good, but we try as far as, you know, providing internal guidance as well. Is we have like try to have quarterly associate meetings within the firm, whereby we, you know, talk about, I mean, leave up to associates. What topic do you want us to address?
Right,
and then try to get a little program over lunch, you know, to go ahead and address that. So that's kind of the mentorship. We have those two aspects.
And how about the CLE stuff? Do you let the associates and partners figure out their own?
Yes.
What they need to do?
Yeah, or that's on them.
Do any guidance on that?
No. Yeah, that's on their own.
Do you still do yours?
Yeah, you still got it. It's 12 years. 12 credits a year.
12 credits a year.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
I used to like going to those things. And then COVID hit and everything became like online.
Yeah, different story.
But I used to love going to those classes because I'd go to the Pennsylvania Bar Institute over in Mechanicsburg. And some of the presentations were live, but most of them were just recorded. I'd just take over my briefcase.
I'm sure. I can envision that whole thing.
I don't care what they're talking about. Yeah. You know, I'm just there to do my time. I'm not a practicing attorney, but I want to keep my license.
Sure.
So it was always, on those days, the people that worked for me, whether it was at Commerce or here, were like, oh, man, he goes to one of those things, like a 4 or 5 hour session. He's going to have so many tasks to hand out because all I do is sit around and think, all right, how do I fix this? How do I fix that?
Yeah.
So, but you got to pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. You got to pay attention. What is you just said something that reminded me as well. I mean, I think I told you relatively recently, the Supreme Court appointed me to the Investment Advisory Board of the Supreme Court, which goes ahead at the CLA because we oversee all the funds.
Wait, are you talking about the Pennsylvania Supreme Court?
Yeah, PA Supreme Court. Oversees the investment funds from the CLE funds, you know, Lawyers Fund for Client Security, IALTA stuff, et cetera. So meet on that quarterly as well.
So you've obviously argued cases in front of Chester County Court.
Sure.
I know that your guys were up in Harrisburg last week. So is that arguments at Commonwealth Court?
Yeah, we, across the board. I mean, yeah. me and others in the firm. Yeah, locally at Common Pleas Court, we argued for the Superior Court, Commonwealth Court, the two appellate courts, PA Supreme Court as well.
Anything on the federal level?
Federal level as well, yeah. Yeah, yeah, correct. I mean, I've had multiple cases at the what would be the Common Pleas Court level, the district court level in federal court. I maybe only argued twice, I think, over the years at the Third Circuit level, more so appellate-wise on the state side.
Are you a member of the United States Supreme Court Bar?
Yeah, sure. Right. Yes.
That's cool.
Early on.
Yeah, did you go down and get sworn in?
I don't think I did. I think I did it remotely.
Gosh, Joe, I did that. It was great.
Yeah.
So I had a guy. You probably never met Chris Ciccone. Did you ever meet him anywhere along your...
I don't think so.
His last stop was with Stevens and Lee in Harrisburg. Uh-huh. And we used to take an annual baseball trip. We'd go to different ballparks. So this one particular year, it is obviously after I became an attorney, we were down in D.C. And we're, you know, looking at all the monuments, and we walked by we walked by the Supreme Court. And he said, we would have needed to make, you know, like a plan to go and go in on the inside. He said, except for me, of course. I'm like, well, why? He said, because I'm a member of the Supreme Court Bar. So there's a special door on the back of the building. And I was like, how'd you get that? He's like, anyway.
Sign up. Yeah. Pay your $65, whatever it is you're in. Right.
Apply.
As long as you're in good standing. Right.
And he said, and then you need someone to sponsor you.
Correct.
And so he did. He sponsored me. And I got in. And now it's the day. And you can go down or you can not go down. Well, I'm going down. So I went in and I sat there. And it's Chief Justice Roberts. And he actually...
So it was relatively recently.
Yeah, this was... I'm going to say it was like 2004, 5.
Okay, recent enough.
Yeah, somewhere around there. It was probably 20 years ago. Maybe a little bit. Somewhere around there. 4, 5, 6, 7, somewhere around there. And so you go in and you sit in this little box and there's all the justices and I'm fascinated by this. And he actually... says Rory Retrieve, the Chief Justice of the United States, says your name, and you sit there, you stand up, and you look at him, and your guy comes up and reads the little thing that they give him, and then the Chief Justice looks at you and says, Mr. Retrieve, welcome to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I was like, I grew up in Harrisburg on Zarker Street.
Right, like, right.
I never thought that the Supreme Court, the top guy is going to ever have my name in his mouth unless it was for something bad.
Yeah, right.
Like
right.
Convicted. So that's really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. That's cool. Yeah, and I think actually, you know what? There's a group of us supposed to go down there. I actually think I was in court. So I was unable to go, as a matter of fact.
Well, I mean, I took time. I took a vacation to go. Yeah, you're a practicing attorney. So we should go down there sometime.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Go hang.
Like maybe I'm make it on a day when they're not, you know, doing anything controversial.
I'm in.
Go down and go through our member door.
Exactly. Yeah. Grab a bite after.
Yeah, grab I'm right in. After.
Let me know when.
So what's next for Joel Frank? So we didn't get to talk about the commission.
Athletic commission?
Yeah, the athletic commission. Yeah. So how long have you been doing that?
I am in my 12th year, I believe. It's 4-year terms. It's interesting because I was initially, Governor Corbett initially nominated me.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually requires Senate confirmation. So you have to go in front of the PA Senate and meet with the people there and do that thing. So what's interesting about it is, and the chairman of all commissions within the state government, it's almost always the same party as the governor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm brand new to the commission, but I came in as the chairman.
Right.
Of the athletic commission, even though others had been on here, because the other two guys were Democrats and I was, a Republican. So I came in initially, and then Governor Wolf, mm-hmm. Corbett was out, Governor Wolf was in. And what was interesting about that is, I think I've told you this, I was the first one to sue Governor Wolf after he became governor on behalf of Eric Arneson. It involved the Office of Open Records.
Right.
So I got to tell you, I was a little nervous that someone was going to put two and two together when it was time to get re-upped again.
You got on – how long were you on under Corbett? Was it like a full 4 years?
I don't remember, Lori.
Or close to
I don't
it. Remember. Now you're under Wolf. Now you got to get re-upped.
I did. I was up re-upped twice. Long story short, I was up twice under Wolf. But again, with my friends on the Senate, I'm lucky enough, fortunate enough to represent the Republican, Senate and sometimes the Republican House on occasion, among other lawyers as well. But I was able to go ahead and continue on mm-hmm. in this role, which I really very much enjoy.
And when's your next?
I think I'm on for another year and a half.
And you haven't sued Governor Shapiro or anything? You're good there?
I think I'm good there, Governor Shapiro. But again, it's interesting, this specific position, because certain positions worry within the government. Like if you're done, it says 4 years, you're done at 4 years in one day. You're mm-hmm. out, right? But the Athletic Commission specifically, the way it's written is you continue to serve until replaced.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm fortunate enough, still have my positive relationships with the Pennsylvania Senate.
And of course, why would you?
Continue
do you know Shapiro, Governor Shapiro?
I've met him. I've been in his presence. I mean, I had a couple of meetings with him here or there, but I can't tell you I'm tight with him.
What do you think, and I don't want to get too political, but what do you think overall about the job he's doing versus, I think there were a lot of things to criticize Governor Wolf about it, and probably the same thing with Corbett, but.
Yeah. Listen, I think it's important to have bipartisanship in order to get anything done, whether mm-hmm. we're talking state level, in Washington, D.C. And I'll talk a little bit political with you unless you want to steer it another direction. But to me, it's about getting doing the right thing. And I realize that's a subjective, different people could say what that constitutes, right? But, this us versus them mentality. It's not productive. It's not healthy for the productive. Unfortunately, I think, quite honestly, that's like, the 10 to 15% outliers on either party side, right? The vast majority of the people, I would like to think and do think.
I promise you that you're right about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of get along. We're all United States citizens or Pennsylvania citizens, whatever the case may be. Let's just try to get and create a better life for everyone across the board.
Yeah, I don't know what the polar sides are. I don't know if it's 10%, 15%, whatever it is. So if it's 15% of the people thinking that way and 15% of the people thinking that way, that means 70% of the people think, within degrees of the same thing.
And I think, quite honestly, the outliers, I don't say that disparagingly, but the people, the outliers are the ones with the loudest voices. So it kind of skews.
So you don't have to call them. I'll say the radicals.
Okay.
The radical right, radical left. Okay. They're the loudest ones.
And it unfortunately skews, I think, people's vision of politics across the board.
Oh, my gosh.
Whereas, like you said, 70%, whatever, 65, 70, 75% in the middle there, just kind of like shrugging and throwing up their hands. And unfortunately, just, the vehemence and the diatribe you have anymore is, you know, people that are willing to get into political and do public service mm-hmm. are like saying, like, why would I subject myself and my family to that?
Why?
So you're losing good people.
Absolutely. I don't think that there's any doubt about that, that anyone that aspires to be a politician now has got to have their head examined, because it's, I mean, look what they've done to some people who were trying to do good things for the country, and they just...
Let alone outright violence.
Outright violence.
You know, to elected officials and others.
And that's because of some of the elected officials use sloppy rhetoric, irresponsible rhetoric, and then that's amplified by the media.
It's problematic.
Yeah.
It really is. It's unfortunate.
Well, that's a whole nother podcast. I think we got to get Joel back. We're at 70 minutes, hour and 10, so that's...
That went quickly.
Yeah, it did go quickly, but I would love to have you back. I mean,
happily.
You and I could chop it up for a long time, and we didn't even touch on wives or, you know, family and how the kids are doing, things like that. We can do all that stuff in another one. But thanks for coming in.
Thanks for the invite. Really much enjoyed it. And again, love my role on the board. Love the relationship you and I have formed, and appreciate the opportunity.
You bet, buddy. All right, Scott. So we're going to be back in a couple of weeks. Who's our next guest?
We're going to have some of our summer interns joining us.
Oh, that'll be fun. Interns. That's going to be a good one. So we'll have Lisa Lunardi, who I know you know.
I do.
Which I still have a bone to pick with her about that. So her son got in a little trouble.
Right.
In Westchester.
Correct.
And she didn't come to me. She went to Ray Micarelli. And Ray got her to Joel, and Joel fixed it. I'm like, Lisa, what are you going to Ray for? You come to me. So, but thanks again for coming in, and we'll see everyone in a couple of weeks, and everyone have a great day.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you for listening to the MidPen Bank Podcast. You can find more episodes at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and more. Do you have a question about the podcast? Email us at podcast@midpenbank.com. References in this podcast to MidPen are to MidPen Bank Corp, Inc., and its subsidiaries and affiliates. This podcast expresses the views of its participants and may not represent the views of MidPen or its officers and employees. In addition, these views are subject to change without notice, and MidPen has no duty or obligation to update the information contained in this podcast. This podcast is being made available for informational purposes only and should not be used for any other purposes. You are encouraged to consult with competent legal, tax, accounting, or investment professionals before engaging in any financial transaction. MidPen does not make any warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the information in this podcast, does not endorse any third-party companies, products, or services, and assumes no liability for your use of this information. Forward-looking statements should not be considered guarantees or predictions of future events. This podcast is the sole property of MidPen and may not be copied, reproduced, republished, or posted in whole or in part in any form without prior written consent of MidPen.